23. Reagan and I are on the couch, an empty pizza box open in front of us. We're digging straight into the ice cream, no bowls needed. "So you've been seeing him?" she says. I told her just enough to explain why I'm so upset, but I didn't tell her everything. "A little. It's not what you think. It's not like we're dating. We're just trying to figure out what's going on. He wants justice for Grant as much as I do, probably more." I don't tell her about the picture with the threat, because I know her. She'd go straight to them and threaten them right back. "How do you know he's not using you for information? He got hit with second-degree murder today. That's not something they throw around lightly." I dig another big scoop of ice cream out. "I know. I was in there. But it's wrong. They have it all wrong." She's skeptical, and I don't blame her. I'd feel the same way if things were reversed. "I don't like it," she says. "And I don't want you hurt by this." "Me either." Reagan stays until she thinks I'm better. She's meeting Josh to study, and it's hard not to be jealous that their relationship isn't bound by secrecy. A few minutes after she leaves, I call Shep.
"Hey."
He answers after the third ring. "Hey," I say. "God, I've been so worried about you. Are you okay?" Of course he's not okay, but I don't know what else to say.
"No. What happened in there? Why is it all on me?"
I take a deep breath. I'm not supposed to tell him, but I know she's lying, and Shep needs to be prepared for what he's up against. It won't be long before the defense files a motion to get everything Stone has anyway. "Lindsay Wells was the girl who testified. She said it was you. She said she heard Grant say your name on the phone just before he was shot." Shep's quiet for a long time. So long, I think he's not there anymore. "Shep?"
"I'm here," he whispers. "Why would she say that?"
The despair in his voice is like a punch in the stomach. "I don't know." I hear his mom in the background, and he gets off the phone quickly. I try to focus on my homework, my financial aid applications for college, anything to get my mind off of what happened today, but it's no use. Even though it's risky, I need to see him, need to make sure he's okay. Shep's family lives on Old River Road, which is basically a long strip of old plantation homes on the bank of the Acadiana River. Since I can't park in the driveway, I pull into a small wooded area on the opposite side of the street from Shep's house. The heavy clouds cover any moonlight that may light my way, so I trip and fall about every other step. By the time I get in the front of Shep's house, I've got dirt and leaves stuck to me in random places. The yards are big on this street, so I'm a good distance from any neighbor, and no one is on the roads. I work my way around to the backyard, keep into the shadows. At least the big windows across the back of the house that look out into the river make it easy for me to see inside. The house is dark and quiet. Pulling out the burner phone from my back pocket, I send Shep a quick text. "I wanted to see you. I'm in your backyard. Can you come outside?" It only takes a few seconds before a light turns on and the curtain is drawn back. And then I see his face. Even from here, I can tell it's bad. He's wrecked. He pushes open the window and hangs halfway out. I step out of the shadows and his face lights up when his eyes land on me. Shep motions for me to come up, but I shake my head. He points to the side of the house, and I step through the yard and turn the corner. On the other side of the house, there is a narrow staircase that leads to a balcony. Shep appears on the balcony and, again, motions for me to come up. I take each stair slowly, hoping to avoid any creak or noise. I have no idea where his parents' room is, but obviously he feels like it's okay for me to be inside his house. He meets me at the top of the stairs, and I jump into his arms. Shep buries his head in my neck, and we hold on to each other.
"You have no idea how bad I needed this," he says.
"Just as bad as I did." He breaks away and pulls me across the balcony, toward an open door. Shep closes the door once we're inside, and the only light on in the room is a small lamp by his bed. His room is big, large enough that there is a seating area on the other side of it, with a couch and a huge TV and gaming system. His bed sits closer to the windows. From up here, he probably has a gorgeous view of the river. Shep hesitates a moment in the middle of the room, between the bed and the couch. I make the decision for him and pull him to the bed. We stretch out, side by side, just like we have on the floor of the treehouse. But this is 1,000 times more comfortable. He rolls over and switches off the light, the room falling into darkness. His hand reaches for mine, and we lie there, in the dark, hands clasped together. My eyes haven't adjusted to the darkness yet, so I can't make out any details of him. I pull him closer. Our faces are just inches apart, but neither of us close the distance.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know how to warn you. It all happened so fast.
I'm crying, and he finds my face in the dark and wipes away my tears.
You did prepare me. Last night after you called, Dad and I had a long talk. The first honest talk we've had about this whole thing.
I told him everything I knew. Something in my gut told me it was going to be bad today.
You did warn me.
Why do you think she named you?
I ask. He pulls me even closer until we're touching from head to toe.
I think whoever sent us those pictures got to Lindsay somehow, and he's probably going to push the others to turn on me.
So what are we going to do? I ask.
We? He asks. Not we. Me. You're not getting mixed up in this more than you already are.
I take a deep breath and work up the nerve to tell him the last thing I've been hiding from him.
I'm with you in this no matter what. It's my fault Stone went after y'all the way he did. The DA asked him to lose this case, but I convinced him to dig deep, to find out what really happened, because I thought you were Grant. I wanted justice for the guy I had fallen for. And I ran into Lindsay a few days ago, told her if she knew something that would help Grant's case, that she should come in and tell Stone. I just wanted justice, and for this to be over for you. But instead, you're the one in trouble.
His hands go to my face.
This is not your fault. There should be justice for Grant, no matter how big of an asshole he was. He didn't deserve to die. One of those guys shot Grant on purpose. One of them is sending us threats and probably threatened Lindsay. This is on one or all of them, not you.
He kisses me quickly, deeply, and I search for absolution, because no matter what he says, I feel guilty. We lose ourselves in this moment, desperate to erase what happened today and to forget what will happen tomorrow. His hands roam across my back, wrap around my sides, pull me in as close as he can. How many more moments like this will we get? Our legs tangle together and we press against one another. How many more midnights will we lie together, sharing our secrets, blocking out the rest of the world? I pull back slightly and frame his face in my hands. Eyes adjusted, I can now make out the details of his face. The deep-set brown eyes, the strong cheekbones, the full bottom lip.
We're a team, remember? We'll figure out a way to get through this, I say.
He nods but doesn't answer.
Then we hear a noise downstairs that makes us both jump.
I better go, I say.
It's hard leaving Chip, but I stayed longer than I should have. I keep to the edge of the road on my way back to my car. Approaching headlights have me ducking behind an overgrown bush. I wait for the car to pass, but instead of speeding by, it slows down. It's a truck I've never seen before, and the longer it idles there on the side of the road, the more my hands shake.
Why are you hiding behind that tree?
A voice booms from the truck.
Crap. I'm totally busted.
I peek my head around and find the passenger side window is rolled down. It's dark inside the cab of the truck, so I can't make out who's inside.
What are you doing here?
Before I have a chance to do or say anything, he's out of the truck and moving toward me. When he steps in front of the headlights, I can see it's Logan.
Oh, God.
Why is he in that truck and not his Tahoe? I try to shrink back in the shrubbery.
I asked why you're here. Snooping around? Spying on us? Again?
I shake my head and try to find the voice that has totally deserted me.
No, I was just driving around.
I've got nothing. No good excuse for being here at this time of the night. And by the expression on his face, he knows it too. Logan stops just inches from me. He's not as tall as Henry or Shep, but he's built like a linebacker. His hands are fisted by his sides as he glares at me.
Why are you here?
He asks in a cold voice.
I don't know. I was just driving around, thinking.
Am I not allowed to do that? He pulls a phone out of his pocket and taps the screen.
Hey,
he says in the phone.
Come out here. I'm across the street in front of the Smith's house. I found something you need to see.
And then he ends the call. I can't stay here.
I'm not sure who he called, but I can't be here.
I try to move past him, but he holds an arm out, blocking me between him and the tree behind me.
You're not going anywhere.
My heart beats so strongly, I'm sure he can hear it.
You can't keep me here,
I say, hoping I don't sound as frightened as I am.
Well, we can call the cops. Let them sort this out.
He says with a smirk and a laugh. Call them. I'm not the one who just got bailed out of jail, though. At this point, I'd rather answer to Mr. Stone than stay here with him one more minute. Using both hands, I push against his chest with everything in me. He's surprised for a moment, and I slip past him, but I don't get far before he catches up, pushing me against the bed of his truck.
No, no, no,
he says in a mocking voice. I'm facing his truck, and he's behind me, pressing me into the cold metal, his arms on either side of me. I can feel him against me, and I'm terrified. He leans in closer. All of those different self-defense moves rush through my brain. I should stomp on his foot or somehow kick him in the balls. I pull my arms in close, preparing for my attack, when suddenly he's gone. I scramble around, trying to determine where he went, but find Shep instead.
Shep's here.
His back is to me, and he's standing in between me and Logan, who is on the ground a few feet away.
Are you okay?
Shep asks without turning around.
Yes,
I mumble quietly, wrapping my arms tightly across my chest. The adrenaline is leaving me, making me jittery. Logan stands up slowly and moves toward Shep.
Man, I was headed home,
he says, pointing down the street.
And I thought I was doing you a favor, letting you know she was spying on us. But seems like you already knew she was here. I guess there's more to all of this than you're telling us. Kate, you need to leave, right now. Get in your car and go, Shep says to me.
Logan's eyes glance from me to Shep and back to me. What's going to happen if I leave? Will they start fighting?
Are you...
Go, now,
Shep says, his voice urgent.
Well, well, well. Looks like my boy Shep's got it bad for the girl with the camera.
I edge away, my eyes never leaving the two of them. Logan blows me a kiss, and Shep takes a step toward him. Logan laughs, and the sound knots my stomach. I turn to leave, but something stops me. I've never been put in a position like the one Logan put me in, and I hate him for scaring me, for making me doubt my ability to take care of myself. So I turn around slowly and stand next to Shep.
Kate?
Shep says under his breath. Logan cocks an eyebrow at me, daring me to say something or do something, and before I can even think twice about it, I say, looks like that scar you got from shaving is almost healed. Come near me again and I'll open it back up. His hand flies to his neck, and if looks could kill, I'd be dead on the ground. I may have made this situation worse, but at least I stood up for myself. I throw Shep a quick glance as I turn to leave, and I can't miss the pride in his eyes. When I hit the pavement, I make a run for my car. Within seconds, it's cranked, and I'm down the road, far away from Shep and Logan. I grip the steering wheel to try to stop the shaking. I just threatened Logan and showed him how much I know about this case. Whether or not he's the one who sent the picture, he knows there is something between me and Shep now for sure. If the others were going to turn on Shep, I've just given them a good reason. I should have never come here tonight.
This could be over by the end of the week. Some of us are feeling bad for Shep, but I remind them all of the evidence is pointing to him killing Grant. And when everyone hears Kate was with him tonight, it just proves how much he was keeping from us. Life in prison. I wonder how it will be at school tomorrow. The lawyers want us to go, keep up the facade, look the part of the well-mannered sons of Belterre. Will we be treated differently tomorrow than we were yesterday? Will the curious glances and whispers be replaced with outright stares and ugly remarks? Whatever we get is nothing compared to what Shep will. Right now, his mind has to be spinning. He has to be questioning why it all fell on him. Or maybe he knows. Maybe he understands he lost the protection he had when he was our brother. There are things he can say to hurt us. But there are things I can do to remind him what can happen if he does. Tomorrow, a whisper here, a rumor there. It doesn't take much for the tide to turn. And when it does, it will roll right over him.
24. November 19th, 1:02 a.m. Private number. I probably made things worse. I'm so sorry. I look like a complete mess. I showered, dressed, and was out the door for school within 30 minutes of waking up. Mom brought home Mr. Stone's car last night, so thankfully I have my own ride for today. Reagan, Mignon, and Alexis are already there when I get to the media arts room, which proves how late I am this morning. Dang, Kate, are you okay? Mignon asks. You look like a truck ran over you. More like a bus. Or a freight train, Alexis says with a laugh. Ha, 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 I say in the most deadpan voice I can. Had trouble sleeping last night. Reagan arches an eyebrow at me. Thankfully, I'm spared from any further questioning when Miranda bursts into the room. The River Point boys showed up for school today, she says in a rush. They're in the office. Some parents already got word of it and are up here, complaining. I knew they would be here. Their lawyers know this case is going to be played out in public just as much as it will be in the courtroom. Just like wearing nice clothes every day makes them come across as well-dressed, respected members of the community, showing up for school today proves that they care about their education. Also, that they aren't afraid or ashamed to be in public. Mignon turns to me. Kate, grab a camera and come with us. There's no way we're not doing a story on this. I'm already reaching for it and heading to the door. I meant every word I said to Shep last night. We are going to figure out who really shot Grant, and to do that, I need to be the River Point boys' shadow. My friends are just steps behind me, but they have to almost run to keep up. There's a crowd in the main hall when I get there. I can spot all four boys through the window, just inside the office. Shep is a good 3 feet away from the other boys, and he looks as tired as I feel. Reagan glances at him, then back at me. She's putting it together. I can see it on her face. The principal is out in the hall, addressing the group of parents gathered there. I recognize one of the defense lawyers a few feet away. I pull my camera out and start firing shots. Principal Wynn holds his hands up. Please, everyone, let's keep it down. If those boys are going to be here, then I'm pulling my daughter. There's no way I'm sending her to a school with a bunch of killers, a woman at the back of the crowd says. I agree. At least send home that Moore boy. He's charged with murder, a man yells out. I can tell Shep heard what the man said, as anger flashes in his eyes. The lawyer steps forward,
and everyone turns toward him.
My clients have only been charged with a crime, not convicted of one. In that grand jury, we weren't allowed to defend ourselves or show any evidence to contradict the prosecutor. Once we have our day in court, I am confident all four of these young men will be exonerated of all charges. Until then, they have every right to attend school and stay on track for graduation. A loud murmur ripples through the crowd, and Principal Wynn steps forward.
Look, this is a new experience for us.
He gestures to the lawyer at his side.
Our policy is clear that any student convicted of a felony must be expelled. But as Mr. Baxter points out, they have not been convicted yet. I called the judge, and he said until there's a conviction, they're allowed to attend school. Shouts echo through the crowd, all expressing the same sentiment. They are not happy. Somehow, Principal Wynn settles the group down and manages to get them out of the building. Once the hall is all but empty, Mr. Baxter pulls all four boys aside. Their heads bend toward him so they can hear his whispered words, while Principal Wynn waits patiently nearby. A few minutes later, Mr. Baxter turns toward Mr. Wynn and says,
"They're all yours now."
"If they so much as put one toe out of line, they're out of here. I don't care who their daddies are. You hear me?" he asks and jabs the air in front of him for emphasis.
"They are well aware that they will be watched more closely than any other student here, and they will be on their best behavior."
Mr. Wynn storms back into his office. Mr. Baxter says his goodbyes and leaves, while the River Point boys shuffle off in the direction of the main hall. Shep is two steps behind, clearly not in the group anymore. He throws a glance over his shoulder at me, and my hands itch to touch him, to let him know he's not alone. But I can't. And that kills me as much as anything else. No English class today, so no chance of seeing him there. My group moves in the opposite direction, and I reluctantly follow. For 2 hours, either walking down the hall or sitting in class, the only thing anyone can talk about is Shep. I heard Shep is gay, and he was in love with Grant, but Grant was totally grossed out when Shep made the move on him, so that's why Shep shot him.
I heard Shep killed someone back in Texas, and that's why his family moved here.
I heard he does coke in the bathroom at lunch.
It will be a miracle if I don't go crazy before noon. Reagan and I meet up with Mignon and Alexis to head back to Media Arts, my and Reagan's last class of the day. Apparently, Mignon and Alexis just got out of science, where Shep and John Michael were.
I still can't believe they showed up today. I mean, if I was arrested for killing someone, there's no way I would show my face, Alexis says.
Mignon lets out a sharp laugh. I'd be on my way to Mexico or Canada, anywhere but here.
Y'all, just think about the media circus that this town will be when it goes to trial. We need some footage of Shep here before it gets crazy. If the national news picks up this story, we'll probably get credit. How awesome is that?
They high-five each other and make plans to stalk him later this afternoon. Reagan ducks her head and stays silent. Thankfully, she's not joining in. A hollowness forms in my gut and grows every time they say his name. I want to scream at them to shut up, tell them that they don't know him or they wouldn't be talking about him like that. But I also know that if Shep hadn't told me the truth, I'd be thinking the same thing. I would be reveling in his downward spiral. I feel sick. Sick. I drop down in front of the computer. Hopefully, drowning myself in work will make this last hour go by faster.
Ugh, Alexis says. That picture is circulating again.
She's at the computer next to me, scrolling through social media.
Look at all these jerks reposting it.
I slide my chair next to hers and take a peek at her screen.
It's that graphic one of Bree and the other two girls.
There's something off about it. Something weird I can't put my finger on. All I can hope is that Bree doesn't see it making the rounds again. Alexis closes the pic, and I scoot back in front of my computer.
That picture is awful, Mignon says. It showed up on my feed, too. Reagan would know the most about this, since the complaints from the girls and their families came through Morrison's office. From across the room, she says, It's a shame they can't figure out where it was taken. You can't see anything but the girls. That's it. That's what's weird. Pull it back up, I say. Ew, why? Mignon asks. I want to see something. I shuffle my chair next to Alexis as she opens her feet again, pulling the image back up. I can feel Reagan and Mignon peeking over my shoulder, their curiosity piqued. Mignon holds a hand over her eyes and is peering at the screen through slits in her fingers. I'm never going to be able to unsee this. We've all heard about this picture and gotten a glimpse of it before, but I'm pretty sure this is the first time we've really studied it. There are three girls in it, all of them naked, and they are posed with hands and body parts in very graphic positions. Are they asleep? They look out of it, Alexis says. I heard they were given that date rape drug, Reagan says. The angle of the photo is weird. Like the camera must have been directly above them or something. And look right there. It's very pixelated. So the camera would have either been very low resolution or far away, I say. I try to get past what's in the image and look at the image itself. It's cropped close, like there's probably more to the original shot. Whoever took it probably didn't want to show anything but the girls. I pull back from the image, judging the angle. Where would you say the camera was in relation to the girls? I ask. Since Alexis shoots a lot of video, she gets what I'm saying. I can see the second she starts examining the image in a different way. Her head tilts and she stands up, her hands holding an imaginary camera as if she's thinking about where you would have had to be to have taken this. God, what if we can help figure out where this was taken? Or at least how it was taken? From above, somehow. You're almost looking down on them, Alexis says as she sits back in her seat. That's what I think, too. But almost more than what a normal height would be. Like, the camera would have been elevated, right? I mean, they're on some sort of couch or chair or something. So if I'm standing on the ground and they're elevated off of the floor, then I can't be directly over them and get this angle, right? I ask. When Alexis zooms in, we can examine small pixelated pieces of the image, much easier to stomach than the whole. We all lean in toward the screen. But it's just bodies and not much else. Reagan reaches past me and taps the screen. Not sure what this is, but it's not a part of her. That's a pattern, like something you would find on fabric. It's next to one of the girls, right at the edge of the picture. It's a small, swirl-like design, and it definitely would be more helpful if you could see what it was attached to, but this small section is all we have. Okay, I can't take looking at it anymore, Alexis says, and closes the screen. This is the stuff of nightmares. Now I know why these girls and their families are so traumatized by this. And Mignon is right. Once you see something like this, you'll never unsee it. Okay. I think it's safe to say we're scarred for life now, Reagan says. The screen is blank, but it's like the image is burned in my brain. Yes, I'll definitely be having nightmares over this one. 25. November 19th, 12:24 p.m. Shep. I bailed. Can't stay in this school another second. I wait until Mom leaves for a smoke break before I approach Mr. Stone. I've thought about it for half the afternoon, and the sooner I can talk to him about Shep, the better. I'm still not willing to tell him I know Shep, have been seeing Shep, but I have to try to convince him that he's got the wrong guy. I knock on his door, and he swivels around in his chair, pulling the headphones off. Yes, Kate? Can I talk to you a minute? I ask. Of course, he says, and gestures for me to have a seat in the chair next to his desk.
What's on your mind?
I pick at my thumbnail, tap my foot, do everything but actually face him. You don't think it's weird that Lindsay said Shep's name in front of the grand jury yesterday, but never mentioned that part to us the night before? His mouth turns down into a frown.
I believe once she really thought about that conversation, it's possible that more details surfaced. I'm just grateful she came forward, as you should be. From what I remember, it was as important to you as it was to me to make a case against one or all of these boys. And now I'm drowning in the guilt, because he's right. This is what I wanted. This is what I pushed for.
His head is turned to the side, so I know he's looking at me the only way he's able. I'm just not sure. I've been watching these boys at school and studying those interviews, and Shep was the last one I would have suspected of killing Grant. He sits forward in his chair.
Were you leaning toward one of the others? You didn't mention that.
I don't want to throw a random name out and have another innocent person be accused of this crime. I mean, there's Logan and the guys in the woods, and Henry with his mystery girl. And I have pics of John Michael passing drugs out and getting in a car of a known drug dealer. But none of it is strong enough to go against what he has on Shep. While I'm gathering my thoughts, he says,
Is it maybe that you don't want it to be Shep? Maybe something about him appealed to you in the videos or at school. Maybe I shouldn't have asked so much of you.
I lean back in the chair and really consider what he said. Am I blind when it comes to Shep? No. I've never been so sure of anything in my life. Shep is innocent. I would bet my own life on it. It's not that. It's just a gut feeling I have. We're going off something one person said, and that's a pretty big part of the story she left out the night before. I mean, if there was something else pointing to him, that would be one thing, but there's just what Lindsay said. That's not a lot when you're talking about someone going to prison. Stone leans back in his chair and crosses his arms across his chest.
I didn't ask that girl to come forward, nor did I put those words in her mouth. I'm bound to use any and every piece of evidence I have to win my case, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
And I'm not going to refute a piece of evidence just because you don't like it. Gaines is furious with me. To waffle now would all but push me out of the door, and I'm not quite ready to leave just yet. Mr. Moore has counsel, and will get his day in court. I can totally see where he's coming from, and if I were him, I'd be running with what we have, too. Left with nothing else to say, I nod and leave his office and settle into my space next to Mom's desk. Mom scurries in a few minutes later, and from her expression, she doesn't have good news. She goes straight to Stone's office, and I follow her, dying to know what's got her ruffled.
It's been leaked that Lindsay Wells pointed the finger at Shepherd Moore. I was walking back in from outside, and a news reporter was on the front steps, filming a segment. She doesn't mention the girl by name, but she reports everything else. How she was on the phone with Grant, how Grant said Shep's name.
Mr. Stone's face gets bright red, and if this were a cartoon, smoke would be pouring out of his ears. He paces around the room.
It wouldn't surprise me if Gaines himself handed over the transcript, he says, then storms from the office.
A few minutes later, I give Mom the excuse that I don't feel well and ask to leave. She's worried, checks my forehead for a fever before giving me her keys and letting me go. I must look terrible. The lack of sleep I've had in the last few weeks is leaving its mark. Once I get home, I boot up my laptop, open in the folder where I copied every single picture and file on the River Point case. Pictures of the woods, the trees, the back patio, the fire pit, the map inside with the tags. I scour every inch. I read reports on Grant, the crime scene, the coroner's report, everything.
After a few hours, I feel like my eyes may start bleeding at any moment. I have been combing through the pictures, but there's nothing. Nothing. I slam the laptop closed and pull the covers up over my head. What am I missing? Just like I've done for weeks, I run through what I have on each boy that would make them want to kill Grant. It's not much. I start with John Michael. He's the hostess with the mostest. Parties at his place every weekend. Can get anything anyone wants. Alcohol, drugs, whatever. Disappears for periods of time. Jumps in cars with drug dealers. He was mad at Grant that night. Not his normal laid-back self. But why? Did Grant do something to him? Something bad enough that John Michael would shoot him over it? Then I think about Henry. And the girl, the one from the video, the one he saw downtown. He cares for her. It's obvious in the way he touches her, runs his hands through her hair. She was pissed at Grant. But why? Would Henry have wanted to get back at Grant for whatever it was? And then there's Logan. What am I missing on Logan? He's a bookie. Did he bet Mark to dress up like Grant? And the money? The two guys in the white truck. I'm guessing the guys Phoebe saw at River Point are the same ones he met behind Pat's. They want the money. If Grant took it and Logan needed it back, how would he get it if Grant was dead? And why would Grant take it in the first place? He was rich. He had a nice car, a nice watch. Even his class ring was made with real sapphire instead of those imitation ones you usually get. Then something starts itching around in my brain. What was it? Something with the watch and the ring. I bolt up out of bed and turn on my laptop once more. Grant's dad asked Mr. Stone about them when we were at River Point. He filled out a report that they were missing the next week. I scroll through documents. Finally, I find it. A claim was filed. Both items combined were worth over $15,000. Would it have been enough to pay the bookies back? Would Logan have killed him over this? It's possible, if Logan was afraid for his life. It's far-fetched, and the defense could tear it apart without trying. But it's something. Something we didn't have 5 minutes ago. I call Shep on the way to school. Since there's little chance I'll get to talk to him in person. I've thought about it all night, and I think there's a decent chance Logan shot Grant and that the watch and ring are the reason why.
Hey, Shep says when he answers.
Hey, I say. I have a weird question. Did Grant always wear his watch and class ring?
His watch and ring?
They were expensive, right? Did he always wear them? Do you know if he had them on when y'all went hunting?
He usually wore them. He may have had them on. God, I don't remember. Why?
The watch and ring are missing. His parents filed a claim saying that they believe they were on him when he died, but we have no record of it, and they weren't on him in the photos they took of him at the scene. He and Logan were fighting that night over money. Any chance Logan killed him and took his watch and ring to pay off what he owed to the bookies? Shep lets out a low whistle.
He'd have to pawn them or something, turn them to cash. He's smart. There's no way he would get caught with Grant's stuff. But yeah, I think it's a possibility.
Logan isn't scared of many people, but he would do anything not to find himself on those guys' bad side. This is something. Every little bit matters.
This is incredible. I'm going to tell Dad.
He mentioned last night that we need to get our own lawyer. I'm going to ask Logan about it, too, to see what his reaction is. Be careful.
You be careful. This is really helpful. But I told you, I don't want you any more mixed up in this than you already are.
I know. I won't be. Just going through what we already have. We talk a few more minutes until I pull into the school parking lot. Okay, I'm here. I'll call you later, I say.
You're already at school? I'm still in bed, he says with a quiet laugh.
I like to get here early and have the media arts room to myself when it's quiet. We get off of the phone, and the rest of the morning drags. Work is no better. I'm stuck back on the third floor with a huge pile of papers to be filed. My burner phone vibrates, and I see a text from Shep. I called around to a few pawn shops, told them I was looking for a nice watch. The one on 2nd Street said they had a lot of them. It's a long shot, but I'm going by there this afternoon when I get out of school. That's only a few blocks away from here. I could go there right now and see if it's there. While I don't think Logan would be stupid enough to pawn it locally, it's worth making sure. Mom won't be looking for me until later, so she'll never know I left. I text Shep. I'm going to check it out. We'll let you know. The pawn shop on 2nd Street is only 3 blocks away from the courthouse. I push through the door just as I get a text from Shep. No, don't go there. I don't want you to get involved with this any more than you are. Too late. I'm already inside. There are several glass cases showing off jewelry and watches, and I study each and every piece. I get to the last case and come up short. I knew it would be a long shot, but one I had to try.
Are you looking for anything in particular?
A man asks me. I was looking for a... And then I stop cold. It's the preppy guy Logan met with in the wooded area behind Pat's. He's in a button-down shirt and khakis, just like before. I glance around the room, and I spot a tall guy who was with him before. The one who got a look at me before I drove away. Preppy guy tilts his head, waiting for me to finish my sentence, but I'm frozen. Tall guy recognizes me. I can tell. I need to get out of here.
A gift for my mom. Sorry, I need to go.
And then I'm out the door, running the 3 blocks back to the courthouse. I'm out of breath, so I lean against the side of the building until I'm ready to walk inside. I text Shep. Watch was not there, but those guys Logan met were. I'm back at work. He texts back immediately.
Oh, shit. Don't go back there. I'll tell Dad. Please be careful. That was crazy for you to go over there.
I walk into Mom's office and she says,
Oh, good. I could use a break.
Catch the phones for me. She grabs her cigarettes and lighter out of her purse and heads down the hall to the elevator. I'll wait until I hear the ding before I go into Stone's office. He nods and says hello to me when he sees me, and I drop down in the seat next to his desk. I'm going to jump right in. Do you remember when Grant's dad asked you about where his ring and watch were? Since they couldn't find them at home, and they weren't listed as being on him when he was shot. Stone tilts his head to the side.
Yes, at River Point.
And then remember those pictures I showed you a couple of weeks ago? The ones of Logan with those other two guys?
The guys you say assaulted Logan?
The tall guy, yes. He punched Logan in the stomach. We know from the interviews that two guys showed up at River Point looking for Logan because he owed them money.
So we're making the assumption that these are the same two men.
Yes. We know those guys are after Logan over money. And we know Logan was mad at Grant for not delivering it. And I don't know if Grant blew the money or what, but it's gone. So what if Logan shot him and then took his ring and watch to pay off the debt? But he'd have to pawn the stuff, right? So I popped inside a pawn shop not far from here, just on the off chance the watch and ring were there.
Were they, the watch and ring?
No, but I saw those guys. They were working there. Stone leans back in his chair. His eyes go into the ceiling, and I know I've got his full attention.
We have testimony that puts Shep there with the gun at the exact moment of death.
But he sits up, holding his hand up.
But I think this is interesting. Something to think about.
He'll look into it. I let out a deep breath and get up to head back out to Mom's desk, just as he says,
Good work, Kate.
The girl with the camera? Still a problem.
26. November 21st. 6:51 a.m. Private number. Are you coming to school today?
Shep. Yes, but I'm coming as me, not one of the River Point boys.
The second I turn the corner to the hall leading to the media arts room, I spot him. Shep is leaning against the wall, and I can't help but sprint across the room. Throwing my arms around him, I ask, "What are you doing in here?" We both scan the hall, but there's no one here. Classes don't start for at least a half hour.
Seeing you before class starts? You said yesterday you loved to get in here before everyone else, and I thought maybe we'd get a few minutes together.
One more quick glance up and down the hall, and then I turn the knob and pull him inside. He backs me against the closed door, and his lips find mine immediately. Without breaking contact, he lifts me up and carries me to the closest chair, sitting down with me in his lap.
"I can't believe you're here. I would have been here an hour ago if I'd known," I say between kisses.
"How early can you get here tomorrow? I may only have a few more days before the school board kicks me out.
Someone started a petition to remove me, you know, because of the murderer thing." I bury my head against his neck.
"Don't say that. Don't talk like that."
He pulls me back, framing my face with his hands.
"Sorry. Bad joke. I told Dad about the guys at the pawn shop. It's a good lead. I'm getting a new lawyer today. We're going to fill him in on everything this afternoon."
"Good. I mentioned it to Stone, too. He's looking into it. It's good he's still open to someone else being the shooter, not just you. So don't give up. It's not over yet."
"I won't. I'm not going down for something I didn't do."
And then I notice what he's wearing. Gone are the button-down and dress pants, and in their place are a faded pair of jeans and a t-shirt that must be one of his favorites, given how worn in it is.
"What are you wearing?" I ask.
Shep looks down.
Clothes?" he says with a laugh. "I can always take them off if they offend you."
His hand goes for the hem of his shirt, and I burst out laughing as a blush stains my cheeks.
"No, I mean, why are you in regular clothes?"
He shrugs and throws me a smirk.
"I've decided it's time to be myself, for better or worse."
This is definitely better. I pull him back close. We kiss and talk and kiss a little more. Glancing at the clock, I give him a quick kiss and say, "You better go. This room will be packed soon." Shep opens the door and peeks out before launching himself into the hall. I sit there with a ridiculous grin until people start filing through the door.
"You look happy this morning," Alexis says as she drops down in the chair next to me. "What's going on?"
I shrug and give her a confused look.
"Spill it," she says.
"What? I can't be in a good mood without something going on?" She looks at me a few more seconds, then scoots her chair across the room.
"I'm watching you."
I get started on the dreaded filing pile. Mom's out to lunch and Mr. Stone is listening to one of the recordings, so for now it's just me versus the pile of papers on Mom's desk. A knock on Mom's door startles me. It's a guy from the mailroom.
"I've got something for Mr. Stone that needs to be hand-delivered."
I show him into Stone's office. "There's a package for you," I say. Stone takes the package, and I go back to Mom's desk.
"Kate, I need your help,"
Mr. Stone hollers from his office.
"Yes, sir," I say, when I stop in front of his desk.
"Tell me what this is. It's hard for me to make out the details."
He passes me the manila envelope that was just delivered to him, and there is a single item inside. I pull it out, and it feels like the world falls out from around me. It's a picture of Shep and me. It was taken from outside the media arts room this morning. I'm all but straddling him, and we're lip-locked. The picture shakes in my hand as Stone waits patiently for me to describe what it shows.
"I can tell there are two people in it, and they seem to be in an embrace, but I can't make out who it is, he says. I open my mouth, but no words come out. Do I tell him the truth or lie? Before I can even make a decision, Mom sticks her head inside his office. I'm back if you need me, she says. Then her smile falls away when she sees the shock on my face. What's wrong, Kate? She moves across the room, and her eyes go to the picture. I can tell the instant she recognizes Shep and me. Mr. Stone leans forward in his chair. I was just asking Kate to help me out. Apparently, there is something of great interest in the photograph that I'm missing. Please enlighten me. Mom's expression changes to one of disappointment. Kate, please tell Mr. Stone who was in this picture. With my eyes never leaving hers, I answer. It's me, and Shepherd Moore. His gasp tears my gaze from Mom as I spin to face him. He's horrified. Snatching the picture from my hand, he tries hard to make out the details for himself.
How could you do this? You are jeopardizing this entire case. I trusted you, and you're kissing this killer behind my back. Are you telling him what goes on in here? Does he know everything we have against him?
Before I can answer, Mr. Stone turns on Mom.
Did you know about this?
She didn't know anything. It's all me, just me, I say through the tears that are rolling down my face. Mr. Stone is looking at me with pure disgust, and it's killing me.
Why did someone send this to me? What do you think it means?
I shake my head. I don't know. Maybe it's Logan. Maybe he knows we're onto him about the watch and ring. I sent someone over to that pawn shop with a copy of that picture you took of Logan and the two other men, and the owner has no idea who they were. Said he had never seen them before. He's lying. I saw them there yesterday.
Get out, he yells, making me jump. Get your things and get out of here. You'll say anything to wreck this case and get your boyfriend out of trouble.
Mom is torn between standing up for me and not losing the job that keeps us afloat. I squeeze her hand to let her know I'm okay. There's no way I'm letting her get fired over me. I grab my bag on the way out and run down the stairs. It's only once I'm almost to the parking lot that I realize I don't have the keys to Mom's car. I drop my bag and sit on the curb, my head buried in my hands. No matter what I find to help out Shep now, there's no way Stone will ever listen to me. Grabbing my phone out of my bag, I call Shep. He answers on the first ring.
Hey, what's wrong?
I check my watch, forgetting he doesn't get out of school for another hour. God, I'm sorry. I should have waited until you were out of school. I hope I'm not getting you in trouble. He's quiet on the other end for a few tense seconds.
No, it's fine. I'm not at school. My parents checked me out. We're about to go into a meeting with my new lawyer. We moved the appointment up. Henry, Logan, and John Michael were offered a deal. If they testify against me, the charges against them will be dropped. The weight of his words settle over me, choking me, suffocating me.
Hopefully, this is one of the last times we have to meet in private like this. By the end of the week, things could be back to the way they were. This feels wrong, one of us says. By now, we all know about Lindsay and the phone call, but even though they think Shep killed Grant, no one really wants to see him go down for it. Though none of us would ever say it out loud, Grant got what he deserved. They're going to convict him. There's no sense in all of us going down, I say. What about the girl? The other one asks. There are lots of things that we want to stay buried, and that girl is scratching a little too close to all of them. She works for that prosecutor, and now we're all going to be on her shit list. I don't think we need to worry about her anymore, I say. Kate's days in the DA's office should be finished once that prosecutor sees the picture I took of them this morning. The other two nod in agreement with me. One more nudge, I look at the one on my left. Did you shoot Grant? I turn to my right. Did you? They're both shaking their heads. I didn't either. That leaves Shep. If it's not him, it's one of us. And he's the one who's been hiding stuff from us. I don't know. It just feels like he's changed, I add. There it is. They're with me. I can see it in their eyes. So we're taking the deal. Yes, we're taking it. And as soon as the ink dries, I'll visit Lindsay. No more loose threads.
27. November 21st, 2:32 p.m. Reagan.
Did I just hear you got fired?
Kate. Damn, that news traveled fast. Reagan.
Kate, what happened?
Kate. The River Point boys. That's what happened. Before I have a chance to scream or cry or say anything at all to Shep, he's got to go. I want to fling my phone to the ground or kick the car next to me or tear something apart. I'm furious, beyond furious. And then I really think about what he said. The other boys are cutting a deal. But Stone didn't make any mention of this. The deal would have had to come through him. Gaines. The DA is handling this for his good old boy friends. And I'm back to wanting to smash things.
Kate?
Mom says from just outside the courthouse doors, keys dangling from her fingers. I jog back up the steps to meet her.
I figured you'd needed a way home.
I hug her tight, and she doesn't hesitate returning it. When I get home tonight, we will talk about this, she whispers in my ear. And then she's gone. I can't go to Shep, and I can't stay here. And I don't want to go home. So I head to the only place I've ever been able to really think, the park. There are a few small kids there with their moms, but for the most part it's deserted. I sit on a secluded bench on the far side of the park and stretch out, my legs dangling over the edge and my eyes staring at the big blue sky overhead. It's cold enough that my breath makes those tiny little puffs of smoke when I exhale. I wrap my arms around my body and let my mind go. I don't think about Logan or Henry or John Michael. I don't think about losing my job or what this means for Mom. I don't think about Shep or what it must be like for him sitting in that lawyer's office, listening to the details of his friends flipping on him. I don't think at all. I just breathe, in and out. My eyes close and my mind goes to the pictures of River Point. I flick through them, shot after shot. I've seen them so many times they're burned in my memory, and I can't get past the idea that I'm missing something. I start at the beginning, just like I shot it. The walk into the woods, the trees, the leaves on the ground, the spot where Grant died. Then, shots in every direction. The image is clear in my mind, like I'm there. What am I missing? The walk back to the camp. The path leading to the back patio, the house, the windows, the board with the name tag still hanging to show the location of the hunters. I stay like this until I've gone through the entire series of photos twice, and I can't stand the cold anymore. My toes are numb. The tip of my nose feels funny, and I'm frustrated. I'm just about to leave when my phone vibrates in my coat pocket. It's a text from Shep.
Just finished with the meeting, hoping I could see you if possible.
I text him back immediately. I'm at the park. You know the one. I sit cross-legged on the bench and wait for Shep, rubbing my hands together, trying to generate a little warmth. It's not long before I see his tall form enter the park, looking for me. I wave him over and he walks toward me, head down and shoulders slumped. I'm guessing the meeting didn't go well. He drops down on the bench next to me, and I don't waste a moment scooting close to him.
You're freezing, he says.
then takes my hands in his, trying to infuse his body heat into mine. I've been here a while, just thinking. How did it go? I ask. He shakes his head, and his face crumples. I feel like I've been hit in the gut. Gaines is going to have your guy offer them a deal tomorrow. It sounds like their dads told him their sons would be very cooperative with enough incentive.
Oh, Shep, I'm so sorry. What did your new lawyer say?
He's supposed to be one of the best, but he was clear that the evidence against me is very overwhelming. His lawyer feels like he got a loser case, just like Stone felt when he got the River Point case. Shep hops up and starts pacing in front of me. He picks up a rock and throws it hard, hitting the side of the fence. I'm so pissed. Then he picks up another one and lets it fly. Shep spins around and says, "They were my friends, my best friends, and they're going to go in front of a judge and lie about me." He kicks a stick and then picks it up and throws it too. "They're going to say I killed Grant." I get up and move in close, wrapping my arms around him. He buries his head against my neck. Some parents on the other side of the park are looking at us, watching him fall apart, so I turn him where they can't see his face. "I'm scared, Kate," he whispers in my hair. "I'm scared I'm going to jail for something I didn't do." I squeeze him hard. Hearing the pain in his voice makes it hard for me to swallow. "Don't say that. It's not over yet." He pulls back slowly. "You're not at work right now. What happened?" I let out a shaky breath and tell him about the picture of us this morning, getting fired, and even about Stone sending someone to that pawn shop. He moves away from me and picks up another stick, flinging it against the fence. "Fuck!" he yells, and a few moms whip around in our direction, shooting daggers at us with their eyes. "What's going on?" he asks out loud, though I know the question isn't one he expects me to answer. "I'm guessing those guys at the pawn shop told Logan about Stone's visit. He knows I would do whatever I could to help you, and he wanted to stop me. I guess mission accomplished." "I don't like it. I can't stand that they're watching us and screwing with you." Shep scans the park, slowly, then moves away from me. He throws his hands out and turns in a slow circle. "Get a good look. Here I am, asshole. Get a good shot of this." And then he holds up his right hand with only his middle finger raised. Parents are now ushering their children far away from us, disgust on all of their faces. I pull him down to the bench and throw apologetic looks their way. He leans forward, resting his elbows on his knees, and drops his head in his hands. "Kate," he says, "what if there's no way to stop this? I can't go to prison for this. I can't." His voice sounds hollow. I wrap my arms around him, pulling him as close to me as I can. "It's not over. Do not give up on me, Shep. I won't let you give up. You didn't do this." We stay like this for a while. He's holding himself together, but not by much. "I'm not giving up," he says. "But I'm afraid my lawyer isn't even going to try. I've got another meeting with him tomorrow. I'm just going to have to convince him I didn't do this." He sits up and scans the almost empty park. "We should leave. It wouldn't be good for us to be seen together." I shake my head. "I don't care about that anymore. Stone fired me, remember?" He pulls me up until we're both standing. "But I haven't forgotten that someone, probably Logan, is watching us, threatening us." We walk, hand in hand, stopping at the edge of the parking lot, in between Mom's car and his Jeep. It's by no means private, but we're hidden somewhat from view. He backs me up against his Jeep, his hands braced on the window on either side of my head. He moves in closer, his body connecting with mine from my shoulders down to my knees. My hands snake under his jacket and wrap around his waist.
His lips land on mine softly at first, then harder. Shep invades all of my senses, and it's so easy to get lost in him. I want to cry when he finally steps back, the cold air slamming into me once his body isn't there to block it.
"I don't want to walk away from you right now," he says.
"Me either." His hands frame my face as he plants tiny kisses, starting from one cheek and moving across the bridge of my nose to the other cheek.
"We're not giving up," he whispers.
"Not giving up," I whisper back. I don't expect Mom to be home when I get there, but she is. She's at the kitchen table with a mug of hot tea in front of her, as if she's been waiting for me for hours.
"Sit down, Kate."
I sit across from her.
It's hard to look her in the face and see the disappointment there.
"Start at the beginning," she says in a quiet voice. And I do. I tell her everything. She never interrupts, although her facial expressions and small gasps tell me she is completely shocked. When I'm done, we sit quietly for a few minutes as she absorbs everything she's heard.
"That wasn't what I was expecting," she finally says.
"It wasn't what I was expecting either." She nods.
"Stone needs to know about the first picture, the one you got during the fire drill."
I shake my head. Stone isn't interested in hearing any of this. I don't blame him for being mad at me, but I never thought it would be more important for him to win rather than to get it right.
Mom lets out a soft huff.
"This isn't a normal case, and you know it. And he thinks he is getting it right. And you've given him no reason to trust you now."
I don't reply.
"So you're still talking to him? Seeing him?" she asks.
I nod and pick at my thumbnail.
"I want you to stop, at least until this case is over. I know you believe he didn't do it, but we don't know for sure, and I still work for Stone. We can't afford for me to get fired, too. Someone is taking pictures of you with him, and, well, that's just more than I can handle. You are the one and only important thing in my life, and I'm not willing to risk your safety over this."
I duck my head, embarrassed by her words. We don't usually say mushy stuff to each other.
"I'm serious, Kate. This is not a game. One boy is already dead. Let Shep's family and his lawyer get him out of trouble. If he didn't do it, the truth will come out."
I nod, but have no intention of deserting Shep. And I don't know how she can still be so optimistic when it comes to the legal system after all these years. I'm not.